How many of you grew up playing this game at home? The Guess Who. It's still out. There's a couple of games, some oldies that are still good today. So in the game Guess Who, each of the players have a card and a character on that card. And their objective is to try and guess the character on their opponent's card. But they can't just ask names. That's going to take forever. And so they ask questions, identifying questions about the other person's person. Characteristics. The color of their hair, whether it's a male or a female, the color of their eyes, the shape of their nose, if they're wearing a hat. They ask all sorts of questions about their characteristics so that they can hone in and try and define who this person is. And so, for instance, if you had this good-looking Eric here with a sailor's cap, all you had to ask is, he a sailor, and you're ready to go, and you got the question. But that's the idea. Can I ask some questions to try and see for myself, to identify who it is that you have on your card? So I've been preaching with you off and on for the past month or so this series about under construction. How from 1 John chapter 3 and verse 8, Jesus came to undo the works of the evil one. And by virtue, he came to restore, to build, to leave the imprint of his image on his people. In every building project, there's a process of tearing down, of demolition, of tearing out that which is old in order to construct and to build that which is new. And that's what Jesus is desiring to do in his people, in all of his people. The work of the evil one has been active in the lives, in our hearts. And Jesus' intent, his goal for every one of us, is to remove his influence, to remove the deeds of Satan, not just from the world, but to remove it from your and mine's lives. And to build out of us a people who look just like him. We notice in 1 John chapter 3 and verse 1, John begins by saying, how great a love the Father has bestowed on us that we would be called children of God, and such we are. For this reason, the world does not know us because it did not know him. Children of God. Let me ask you a question. If you had to identify the characteristics of a child of God, what would you say? Now, if you had a child of God, a picture of a child of God on a card, what kind of characteristics are you going to be talking about? What kind of identifying markers are you going to see? What defines a child of God? We might have a lot of answers there. There might be a lot of things that you and I come up with, but John gives us a simple definition of a child of God in verse 10 when he says, by this the children of God and the children of the devil are obvious. Anyone who does not practice righteousness is not of God, nor the one who does not love his brother. Two very simple characteristics of those who are children of God. Number one, they practice righteousness. Righteousness, right living under God's standard. Right living before God's eyes. We're right. We're doing the right things in the right way. And we've talked about that in different avenues this past couple weeks or this month. About pursuing purity over impurity, or strong faith over doubt, or maybe just broadly pursuing the right path versus the path of sin. That's the idea here of people who do what is right, because if you look in verse 7, we're simply trying to walk in the image and the footprints of Jesus. We're being righteous because he is righteous. We're doing the right things because he did the right things. And so one of the identification markers, one of the ways we can define the people of God, the children of God, is that they do right things. They're righteous. The other one is that they are people who love their brother. They love their brother. They love one another. And all through 1 John 3, and just seeping through 1 John 4, the apostle, beloved by the Lord, comes back and says, if you're going to be a child of God, you're going to wear that title, you're going to walk that walk, then you're going to be a person who loves their brother sincerely. Brethren, there may not be a more distinguishing characteristic of the people of God than that we love one another. And that we love one another sincerely. We love one another from our hearts. Our talk today is simply this. From 1 John chapter 3 and verse 14. We know that we have passed out of death into life because we love the brethren. He who does not love abides in death. Oh, we've looked at some of the different ones, how Jesus came to replace all the different deeds and actions of sin in our lives. But today we're ending with this one right here. Jesus came to replace hate with love. We might find other ways of describing that from verse 14. He came to replace isolation with family. He came to replace animosity or indifference with fellowship with one another. But that's the idea, that Jesus came to take away all the strife that exists between one another, and he came to leave in its place a pure, sincere love for the brethren. The amazing thing from this context is that he gives us an example and he says, don't do this. Now, if you're going to pull out a Bible example of someone who didn't like someone, of someone who really wasn't loving, of someone who in fact hated a brother, who would you use? Well, you might use maybe King Saul. I mean, he had a vendetta against David. You might use Judas. He's kind of like the top of the list. Here's the one who actually rejected the Lord. He was the one who turned them over to his accusers. He's the one who handed them over to those who came in the garden. But the example he uses in 1 John chapter 3, he says down in verse 11, he says, for this is the message which you have heard from the beginning, that we should love one another, not as Cain, who was of the evil one, and slew his brother. And for what reason did he slay him? Because his deeds were evil and his brothers were righteous. Notice who said there about Cain? Why did Cain kill Abel? John gives us a simple definition, a simple explanation. Why did Cain kill evil? Well, because Cain chose to do what was evil, and his brother chose to do what was right. And that's right. But you and I know there's a lot more than just he did what was evil. He chose what was evil. We can kind of characterize or clarify, maybe specify that evil, can't we? Why did Cain kill evil? Why did Cain kill Abel? Well, because he was jealous of God's attention. He was envious of God's praise because he was angry over perhaps his own failure to do what he should have done in the first place. And out of his selfishness and envy and greed and anger, he took his brother's life. That's the point, brethren. The sin of Cain did not begin with his hands. It began with his heart. And that is what Jesus came to take away from me. Listen to this. Bitterness. I don't like you. Resentment. I'm not going to get past this. Unforgiving. I'll never let this go. Gossip. Not only do I not like you, I don't want others to like you either. Envy. I want what you have, and I don't want you to have it either. Rudeness. I don't care about you. Hate. I despise you. Before a person ever speaks, before a person ever reaches or strikes, there are seeds of the evil one that have taken root deep down in our hearts. And Jesus has come to rip these out, to tear these out. This seems really strange when you look at verse 1. A child of God who walks in love, a child of God who does what is right. In verse 1, it says that the world doesn't know them. The world doesn't know us because the world doesn't know the one we're modeled after. The world doesn't know Jesus. But not only does the world not know us, in verse 13, things that seem different from the world, strange from the world. When you're different from me, when you're strange from me, we tend to attack the things that are different than us. And so in verse 13, not only does the world not know us, the world's going to try and put an end to it. The key hub of 1 John 3, brethren, is verse 7, when John is saying this, I don't want you to get confused as to who you are. I don't want you to be deceived as to who you really are, as to your identity. Let me define for you what a child of God is. It's not like Cain. You don't treat others the way that Cain did. You don't treat people like the world, that you get what you want out of people, you use them to be used to get the things that you need. No, the child of God, the children of God, are trying day by day to look more and more like their master, more and more like their king. Can you hear a conclusion with me for a moment? You know it because I've said it before, but we need to hear it. Ricky has said it before, but we need to hear it. What John is saying here in 1 John chapter 3, especially down in verse 14, is simply this here. It's real, simple, it's hard to live. You cannot be wrong with your brethren and right with God. You cannot be wrong with the people of God and be right with your Father. That just cannot exist. And so the example he gives is you're going to love your brethren because of verse 16, that is precisely what Jesus has done for you. And so he gives us an example to follow, that we have a love that puts others before ourselves. Verse 16, we know love by this, that he laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. We love our brethren just like Jesus loved, and look at that love. Look at that love. That he is willing to put not just the needs of his apostles, not just the Jews, he put the needs of the world before his own. And catch that in, because if you've been here since 9, or you were here just now, we went to the cross. Did you see that? Did you see those nails? Did you feel the spikes? Did you smell the blood? Did you see the timber? Do you realize that Jesus was not beheaded? Do you realize that Jesus wasn't poisoned? That the way that the Son of God was put to death was the most torturous, elongated, the most suffering a person could endure. They drug out his life inch by inch until he finally breathed his last. Now here's the thing, if you are listening close to what Kevin is saying, catch what John is saying in verse 16, put it together. Jesus was willing to experience the depth of human suffering because the depth of his love was far greater. Why would someone experience such suffering? Why would someone endure such pain? Because his love was far greater than the pain he knew he was going to experience. And John says, I want you to love like that. A love that puts the needs of others before your own. A love that puts the best interests of others before our own. I would imagine, if you and I saw someone and they were going to step out on the street and we saw a car go by, we would do everything we could to keep them from getting squashed by that car. And so we said, hey, there's a car coming. In fact, we would run out there and we'd grab that person to bring them back because we want to save their life. We want to keep them safe. Well, what about this? What about when it's not a car coming? What about when it's not physical harm? What about when it's spiritual harm? What about our brothers and our sisters who are suffering not in the flesh, but they're suffering right here, they're suffering in their heart? Because as Paul would say, what about those who are unruly, those who are faint-hearted, those who are weak? He says, here's what you're going to do, brethren, family of God, children of God. You're going to admonish the unruly. You're going to offer that corrective teaching to those who are unruly. You're going to encourage the faint-hearted. You're going to build those who feel broken down. You're going to help the weak, those who are struggling spiritually. You're not just going to watch on the sideline. You're going to help them get strong. And then he says in the end, maybe we need to circle this in our Bibles. Maybe we need to live this week. Be patient with everybody. Because we need a lot of patience. Because there's times when we say things when we shouldn't say them. And there's times when we post things when we shouldn't post them. And there's times when we act in a way that we shouldn't act that way. And there's times when we need to be really patient with one another. Patient with one another's shortcomings. Patient with one another's immaturities. Immaturity is not found by age. Maturity is found by growth. Be patient with all. Why? Because the love of Jesus puts the needs of others before ourselves. Brethren, you know what this means? Loving like verse 16. I will not think. I will not speak. I will not do any evil towards my brethren, period. That's simple. Let's hear it again. I will not entertain any thought in my mind about a brother or sister that has any sin or evil or ill intent. I will not speak about a brother or sister in any way that's going to tear them down or say anything negative about them. I'm not going to use my hands or my actions to do anything that would hurt or wound this brethren. Why? Because I'm loving like Jesus loved, and he puts the best interests of others first. And then he qualifies it. He says, this is also a love that puts people before possessions. Verse 17, when he says, but whoever has the world's goods and sees his brother in need and closes his heart against him, how does the love of God abide in him? You got someone and he's in need. He says, the people of God fulfill the needs of those around them, especially of their brethren. And so if it is an emotional need, I have an ear that is open and I have some advice I'm ready to give. If it's a spiritual need, I have the word of God open and my prayers are going. But here he says, if it's a physical need, your brother or sister has some kind of a physical need. Do you notice the reason some people fail to give physical provisions to those who are in need. The reason they have closed hands is because they have a closed heart. Well, let me ask you something. How do you open up a closed heart? How do you soften a hard heart? How do you get someone to love like what that looks like up there on the board? I'm asking you today, how do you do that? How do you let go of that grip, maybe of bitterness, maybe of greed, to where you would open and pour out your life to those who are in need? Do you know what the answer is? Because we just did it. When you go back to the hill, to Calvary's hill, and you go back to the cross, and you see that love. Beloved, if God so loved us, we ought to love one another. Now, do you know what that means? Can I give you something to do today? Man, I got this brother or sister. They're under my skin. I can't stand it. I can't. I don't want to do this. I don't. I know what it says and I know what the Bible teaches. I don't want to do it. I'm just going to be honest. I don't want to do it. I don't want to be nice to them. I don't want to be kind to them. I don't want to let this go. I don't want to forgive them. Not him. Not her. Not this time. Not this situation. You know what the answer is? That you take that pain, you take that frustration, you take the name of that brother or that sister, and you take it all the way up that hill and you take it to the cross. Because, brethren, all bitterness, all anger, all hate melts away when you can honestly and sincerely look at that cross and realize that love was not for the world, that gift was for me. Those nails were for me. That blood was for me. And if God so loved me, if he did this for me, then I can give some love. Then I can offer kindness. Then I will offer grace and forgiveness to my brethren around me. If God so loved us, we have to love one another. Maybe the reason we found ourselves so distant and so unforgiving is that we spent so far from Calvary, so much time away from the cross. You got something there, and you don't want to let that go? Then take it. Take it with you. Take their name. Take the conflict, and you take it with you back to Calvary. I want you to notice something unique about 1 John chapter 3. We've mentioned a lot of different subjects right out of this chapter, and I want you to notice a shift that takes place. In verse 3, he talks about purification. He says, everyone who has this hope fixed on himself purifies himself just as he is pure. And then verse 6, he says, no one who abides in him sins, and no one who sins seen him or knows him. Little children, make sure no one deceives you. The one who practices righteousness is righteous just as he is righteous. Do you hear the emphasis? He says, you purify yourself. The one who is wicked is wicked, and the one who is righteous is righteous. And it's John's way of saying, you got to do this on your own. I can't be pure for you. I can't be righteous for you. I can't be wicked for you. You're going to choose your own path. You've got to make this up on your own. It's you and your choices and your decisions. You've got to do this. You've got to be pure. You've got to be righteous. You've got to choose the right choices. But you know what the amazing thing is? In a chapter so focused on love, on loving one another, I want you to notice how we started all this. Did you see it? Notice it. Just look at it on the screen. See how great a love the Father has bestowed upon us, that we should be called the children of God, and such we are. For this reason, the world does not know us, because it did not know him. Beloved, now we are children of God, and it has not yet appeared as to what we shall be. We know that when he appears, we shall be just like him because we shall see him just as he is. Do you notice the emphasis? Through the chapter, he says, you've got a lot that you can do. In fact, there's a lot that you have to do, but I don't want you to forget. I'm going to call you to love one another because there's something that you have in him. Can you pull that right out with me? We're family. We are children of God, and such we are. Brethren, you are sitting in a room of the redeemed, of people who have made the same confession, of people who have made the same commitment. I belong to King Jesus. We're not talking about people who have made a prayer private in the closet. We're talking about people who have plunged in the water, who have said, I am giving my life to the King. You are in a room of the collective of God's people who said, I'm with him and I'm following the King. We're family. Here's the thing. Family never gives up. Family works it out. Family stays together. Family is patient. Yep, families have problems. There's no such thing as normal except on the washing machine. And so, no, we're not normal. We have some issues. We have some conflicts. But family loves. No one loves like family. No one seeks to understand like family. No one stays together like family. Family works it out. John says, I don't want you to forget. It's not that I'm a child of God. We are the children of God. And then he reminds us that we're in this together because he says, for this reason, the world does not know him because it does not know him. It doesn't know us. The world doesn't know us. Your brethren, right now, right here, here, at home, those who assembled early in the morning, can I tell you something about your brethren? Your family here at Campbell Road are trying everything they can every day to be clued into God through his word and to know this word better and better. Your family here at Campbell Road are doing the best that they can to make their marriages thrive, and not just survive, but to thrive, to draw closer to one another, even in the midst of a year like this. And your brethren here at Campbell Road are trying to the best of their ability to raise their kids, not just to know God, but to love God and to love him fiercely. And your brethren here at Campbell Road are facing the world. And so they're facing a world that doesn't know them and doesn't know you. And so there's conflict at work and there's conflict at school. There's conflict, of course, on social media and in politics, but there's conflict everywhere because the people of God are facing an increasingly wicked world. And the more that we try and shine our light, the more the darkness tries to snuff it out. But our brethren, your brethren, do that and know that. And then all the things on our hearts, our loved ones who are sick, our families grieving those who have passed away, the kingdom come, and the glory of Christ. Your brethren are praying those same prayers at home. What John is saying is, don't forget you're in this together, and don't forget who the real enemy is. We are not the enemy. Do not be deceived, my brethren. We are not the enemy. All the peripheral decisions before you made into this room does not matter. We are not the enemy. The world doesn't know us because we are the children of God. There is an enemy we stand against. There is an enemy we try and fight against. And he is doing the best that he can to pollute this world and all of our neighbors at its worst. But John says, I don't want you to forget that you're in this together. And in fact, I don't want you to forget what all this is about. Because when he comes, and when he appears, we shall be like him, because we shall see him just as he is. Isn't that a rich verse? Have you thought about verse 2 before? I don't know what Jesus looks like in his glory. But when he comes, we're going to see him. And not just see him, we are going to be just like him. Have you thought about that for yourself? What will you be like glorified in Christ? I know you've thought about that. The resurrection, if you thought about it, being like Jesus, free from all the shackles of this world, if you thought about what it would be like to be like him, I need you to do something for me. I need you to look right and left just for a minute. I can see you, so do it for me. Now do it for a minute. I'm going to come down and do it too. I'm already looking at you. I keep looking at each other. Have you thought about verse 2 this way? Can you do that again? Because have you thought about your brethren in the image of Jesus? Man, that brings tears to my eyes. I love that. Because I'm looking at some of the most beautiful people in the world right now. And one day, there's not going to be any sickness, no crutches, no masks. All of our imperfections are going to be gone. And I'm looking at you now, and one day I'm going to be seeing you in glory. Just like Jesus. Oh, your faces are going to be shining and smiling just as they are now. No sin, no sin, no temptation, no evil, no weakness. We will be like him, just as he is. There's a reason when we sing that song, it's not, when I get to heaven, what a glorious day, or what a wonderful day it'll be. When we all get to heaven, I can't imagine heaven without you. And when you look right and left, it ought to be the same, my brethren. I can't imagine going home without you. Without you. Because as wonderful as verse 2 is going to be for me, at least in my hope and in my aim, I can't wait to see that day for you and to share in that together. First John 3 and verse 8, he came to undo the works of the evil one. He came to remove the work of Satan that has been active and present in our lives. There's a prophecy of Jesus in the book of Micah chapter 7 verse 19 that says that you will again have compassion on us. You will tread our sins underfoot and hurl all our iniquities into the depths of the seas. That's 1 John 3 and verse 8. He came to take all the works, all the evil, all the deeds, all the sin of Satan that has been in our lives and to cast it far from us. But listen, if any of this is going to stick, here's where it is. If Jesus has cast our sins into the depth of the sea, don't go diving to find it again. If Jesus has put to death the old man, don't resurrect him back to life. He came to remove this from us, all of it. The impurity, the doubt, the fear, the sin. And even today, he came to remove what causes conflict between us. Because Satan will want nothing more than to destroy us from the inside out. Jesus came to take that away. He took that bitterness from our heart. He took that anger from our heart. He took that unforgiving from our heart. He did it through the cross. Don't go back and bring it back again. Leave it dead. Leave it gone. Because in its place, we're going to find what Jesus has been working on all along. If you've been to the Alamo, you've seen that picture, small little picture, James Butler Bonham. There's a caption next to it that says, "No picture of him exists. This portrait is of his nephew, Major James Bonham, deceased, who greatly resembled his uncle. It's placed here by the family that people may know the appearance of the man who died for freedom." Can you see what Jesus has been doing all along? I want to take the world out of you. I want to take all that Satan has done to deceive, to corrupt, to taint the image. Because what I want more than anything is for you to show the world who I am. We serve an invisible God, my brethren. We serve a God we cannot see with our eyes. But day by day, as we put this on, as we remove the works of Satan through the power of the blood of the Lamb, and we become more and more like the Son, we are showing the world, one neighbor at a time, what Jesus really looks like. Until the one day when we will be there and we will see him face to face. So we're under construction. We're God's great building project. We're not done yet. We have a lot of work yet to do. But we're going to keep on working and we're going to keep on growing and we're going to keep on letting Jesus do his good work in us until that great day comes. If you've not started that journey, today's the day to do so. Today's the day to put off that sin and to give your life to King Jesus. And you can do that today. You can turn from your sin You can leave that path behind, the path that's only of wrath and ruin, and you can come today. You can come today confessing that you believe that Jesus is the Christ and putting him on in the waters of baptism and being adopted into his family. And that could be your choice today, and we would love to help you with that. Or maybe if you're here, if you've allowed Satan to be active and present in your life, maybe specific to what we've talked about today, if there's some conflict between you and another, some hates and some evil thoughts in your heart and your mind, today's a good day right here in the pew while we are singing for you to make this right, to confess this sin, to turn from it. And before you leave this building, let's make things right with the people we've made wrong. And if we need help, God's going to help us all the way. But if we can help for you and we can pray with you, let's do that right now. Let's do that as we stand and as we sing.